to set the scene. Seems a long time since we did the previous chapter, which was a fortnight ago. Jacob wrestling with God. I wasn't actually here that night. I ended up going down to Tewkesbury very unexpectedly. So I'm sorry I wasn't here. But that seems to me even longer ago. But if you remember, Jacob was getting ready to meet Esau, his brother. And he particularly at the end, towards the end of that, he wrestled with God. Let's just look at a couple of those bits just very quickly. He'd got to his uncle's farm about 20 years before. He was taken in, cheated, worked hard, cheated, endured his marriages due to jealousy and all sorts of problems in those. Was virtually, as far as we could see, out of touch with God, the God of his fathers, Isaac and Abraham. He virtually no mention of God in those 20 years of what we're told. There may have been that we didn't hear about. But it looks as if it was very, very difficult and he was battling through. And not really, it seems, aware of God, who was indeed a hidden God to him at that point. At one point in that, he wanted to go home. But Laban, who cheated him as much as he had cheated everybody else, prevailed, and he wasn't allowed to. He was told he could build up his own stock, but he was cheated yet again, and it wasn't done honestly. However, there came a time when God gave him the okay to leave. He said, right, go home. He did that in a dream. Laban was out of the way at the time, somewhere with his own flocks, some distance away. Of course, they hadn't got mobile phones in those days, so if you weren't on site, you didn't know what was happening. So he probably had quite a bit of time for Jacob to get organised. And well, the first miracle, really, was that he spoke to his two wives and said, I think it's time to go home. And they said, we agree. You remember any other occasions when they'd agreed? I don't think there were any. It had been fight all the way. This was the first time the three of them were in total agreement, I think. They said, yes, we agree. They had been struggling also with Laban, who was their dad. And he hadn't been easy. So that Jacob then revealed to them that he'd actually had a dream from God in which God had told him very specifically that this was the time to go home to meet Esau again. This was the time to leave Laban. So, they got themselves organised quickly. On the way, he set off. And Laban, after a while, when he realised they'd gone, followed. Do you remember, from 2 weeks ago? He followed. And he was initially very angry, but God gave him also a dream. They hadn't got Bibles in those days. They hadn't got scriptures. God used dreams a lot to tell people what he wanted them to do. He does sometimes, even today, but not as much, because we do have God's word to read, and he speaks to us mainly through that, or in one of the main ways. But in those days, they had a lot of dreams which told them what God was wanting them to do. So Laban, on his way, somewhat angry, has a dream. And the dream says, don't say anything to Jacob. He was off to catch him up and to tell him what he thought and drag him back, possibly. And God said, don't say anything to him. Seems a bit strange to us. What it amounted to was listen to him. Don't start in, listen to him. So when they actually met, in fact, it went very well. In fact, Laban was sweet reason. He even said he'd have given them a party if he knew they were leaving, which seems a little unlikely, but there you are. And it wasn't nearly as difficult as Jacob expected that would be. So they went on their way and Laban returned. That was one hurdle overcome. Soon after that, Jacob had his night wrestling with an unknown individual in the dark. If you remember, he'd crossed his family over a river they'd got to get over, took them all across, and for some reason came back. And there, in the dark, unless there was a moon, this man came and wrestled with him. Was it a man? It looked like a man. It seemed like a man. Who was it? They wrestled all night. It must have been very hard work. It was a turning point for Jacob. As the night went on, and he was prevailing, really, the fight continued right till dawn, and his assailant said, "Stop now. You've prevailed." And he's beginning to get the feeling, Jacob is, that this is not an ordinary assailant. He realized that this is either an angel or God himself, in human form. It must have been very, very, well, I can't think of the word, really. Shocking, in a way. Stunning. He realizes he has wrestled with God. And he has his hip touched on the sinew of his hip. Several of us know what sore hips are like. And it was painful. And it continued painful. That was the mark of having wrestled with God to remind him. So again, they were on the move the next day. And we're getting into chapter 33 now. They'd got a lot of sheep, a lot of cows, a lot of other animals as well. And they probably weren't moving hugely fast with all that lot and the family. Jacob looks up, and what does he see? He sees Esau coming. He's been very tied up with getting away from Laban, but Esau could be an even bigger problem. You remember when they parted, he had just cheated Esau for the second time. Once was out of his birthright and the other time was out of his blessing as the eldest son. And Esau at that point was what you might call spitting feathers. He was not happy at all. He was absolutely livid. In fact, his mother and father sent Jacob away, because they were very much afraid that Esau would probably kill him. It was that bad. It had always been bad between them. They were twins that were ultimate rivals from the start. What you dread if you have twins, I should think. So he looks up and he sees, I think it says he looked up and saw, turn the page, Phil, there was Esau coming with his 400 men. How would you feel if you looked up and saw your greatest enemy on the horizon with 400 men? Anyone be happy? Don't think so, no. I think they probably were actually on the horizon and a great deal of dust was being thrown up. They were possibly on horses. If they'd been walking, he wouldn't have seen them at a great distance, probably. If they were on horses, the dust would be kicked up. I think they probably were on horses. Anyway, it seems to have taken them a while to arrive, because he was thinking on his feet at this moment. He gets the family organised first. He divided the children among Leah and the maids and Rachel. The children and the maids went first. Leah and her children went second. Rachel and Joseph were in the rear. Knowing Jacob as we do, you might have thought that he would be hiding at the back behind Rachel. Was he? No. Jacob is beginning to be changed by this wrestle with God. He's been thinking things through on his feet quite fast. As Esau approached, Jacob was hoping that the flocks of sheep and things that he'd sent on ahead, as what you might call a sweetener for Esau, had been accepted. They're coming fast. He can see them coming. He's organized the mothers and the children. He didn't stay at the back. He went up to the front. That would have been in front of the maids and their children. And he walked forward as Esau approached. Well, here we are. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. This was the brother he'd been an absolute loggerheads with. Murderous loggerheads with. And he went down on his knees on the ground 7 times as he approached. Jacob is changing. You could be cynical and say, well, he knew what would help. I think he was changing. It was probably a little bit of both. But he had learnt some lessons, and I think he was learning them quite fast. You can picture the scene, I'm sure. The ruthless stop-again Jacob is not the one we see here. Not the one who stole his brother's rights without any shame. The one who deceived his dad. God is beginning to change him quite fast. And the old Jacob, even if it did look like a good way to get on the right side of his brother, wouldn't have humbled himself in this way. He was very different. So verse 4 shows us that Jacob has also been at work with Esau. Esau was also spitting feathers when they parted company. He was absolutely furious. And God has obviously been at work there as well. We know from somewhere, from a different chapter, that Rebekah has died by now. So it would have been Esau and his dad at home. It was in the family, it was Esau and dad versus Rebekah, mother, and Joseph. So that was the two halves of the family at war with each other a lot of the time. I do wonder if the fact that Rebekah had died, leaving Esau and his dad together, meant that they did a bit of talking and a bit of thinking, and God was able to reach into that relationship as well and help them to realise why and how things had gone so badly wrong. And God certainly seems to have enabled Esau to find the grace to put the past behind them. Esau greeted him like a long-lost, much-loved brother. Far, far from how it had been when we were last together, when they parted as enemies. Was it a case of absence makes the heart grow fonder? It was so bad that just that wouldn't have been enough. God had certainly been at work in order to ensure that this meeting went well. Both appear to have been responsive to God for it to work. Both had had to step out in faith, whatever their reservations were underneath. Each was responsible for his own reaction, not his brother's. They were trusting God with all they could assemble at that moment, which was very stressful. We don't know how he knew that Esau would be on his way, which is interesting. They hadn't got phones or mobiles or anything in those days. But if you think about it, in the previous chapter, I think it was the previous chapter, he'd sent half the flocks on ahead as a gift to Esau. And it was after that that they saw Esau on the horizon. I think God must have sent Esau specifically. This was very well orchestrated by God. Without mobile phones, you can't see how it happened. So I think God was very much at work in this meeting. One of the key things in the whole of the first half of Genesis, I think. Anyway, he arrived. Did he arrive? Where have we got to? Here we are. Esau, if he was on a horse, jumped off it and ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms round his neck and kissed him. If Isaac had seen that, he wouldn't have believed it, I don't think. It was just so far away from how it had been all the years when they were small and teenagers. And they wept. What a moment. They'd been enemies the whole time they'd been together. They'd separated in anger. They'd been apart for 20-odd years. And then there was this amazing reunion. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. Who are these, he says? Because he had no idea. There'd been no contact. He had no idea what Jacob had been doing, he thought he knew where he was. But he didn't know anything about it. And Jacob answers, they are the children that God has graciously given your servant. What's the key word, do you think, in what he said there? Two words. Your servant. He had always wanted to be the boss. He was the second twin, the younger one, And the place of the eldest was very important in that culture. He would never be the eldest, so he cheated. And he'd stolen that right. And here he is, having recognized, I think, what he'd done. And he says, these are the children that God, gives God the credit, has graciously given your servant. He had never acknowledged that he was a lesser in the system than Esau. They were equal to God. But in the system he was the lesser one, and he always had been, which he hated. Then the maidservants and their children approach, and they bow down. And then Leah and her children come, and they bow down. And last of all come Joseph and Rachel, and they too bow down. Esau seems a bit mind blown by all this, and he says, what about all those animals that I passed on the way? To find favour in your eyes, my lord, Joseph says. It's almost as if he is deliberately putting himself in second place to Esau, as he should have been, the way the family had started out. I think he has recognised what he'd done. You could argue he's just trying to say the right thing, but I think he knew. To find favour in your eyes, my lord, he said. But Esau said, I have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. But Jacob was not being dissuaded. No, please, he said. If I have found favour in your eyes, which he knows is so important, at this point, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Please accept the present that was brought for you, to you. For God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need. He wasn't saying that when they were all in the middle of all the children and the wives and all the rest of it, but he's realised it now. He's come to see what God has been doing. There's a lesson here for us. Don't ever give up on God's power to change relationships in amazing ways. It may take decades. It did here. It may take less. But God can, obviously we see him doing it here, work in both halves. So if we are wishing someone else would change, we need first to be tuned into God, to look at us, to take a look at ourselves, ready to let him change us, our attitudes, even before we see any evidence of what he's doing or when, with the other person. With these two, it was very synchronized on this one occasion. It isn't always. And they hadn't seen each other for a long time, so we don't know how long God had been working in both halves. But he was obviously at work in both of them. So if we want another person to change, we need to be tuned into God too, and ready to let him change us, our attitudes, our ambitions, our thoughts, even before we see what else he's doing. Both need to accept the other for them to be reunited, especially where there was such tremendous enmity between them. For one to forgive and move on, if both are willing, is possible. So, Jacob, you could say, has eaten humble pie by the plateful. Esau seems to have done all right by the staff he brought with him. And he indicates, as Jacob again re-offers the flocks that he brought as a gift. He says, no, I've done all right. He indicates he's not short of flocks. And he invites Jacob to travel back with him to his home. Probably the same place, though not certainly, where Jacob had left from all those years before. But Jacob declines. He says, we'll follow. I think he's probably overwhelmed by the reaction he's got, and he's probably feeling a bit, phew, you know, it's gone all right. He's probably exhausted, actually. He says, no, don't worry, we'll follow. The mothers and children can't go as fast as you. It sounds like Esau had come pounding along on horses, possibly. they hadn't got horses, Jacob hadn't got horses. They were probably on foot, more or less, maybe on camels, which don't move at any great speed. And it may be he's just feeling, whew, it's gone all right. Let's take it calmly. I think he's a bit overwhelmed, possibly, as well. Esau is, you could say, a bit full on, as we might say today. Or it could be that the old independent Jacob is wanting to be in the driving seat with his own family again for a bit. We'll make our own way, he says. And he won't be budged from that, while remaining very humble and deferential to Esau, which you can understand. This meeting has gone better than he would ever have hoped for. Why? Because God had changed him. God had changed Jacob. Quite drastically. And Esau. And he changes us as well. Probably not many of us quite that drastically in quite such a dramatic way, but he can and he does change us as well. And it can be quite overwhelming. St. Paul is another example of someone who was changed very drastically. You remember the story, it was on the road to Damascus, and he was thundering along, almost certainly on a horse, on his way to capture Christians from Damascus, with a view to taking them back to Jerusalem, throwing them in prison, and seeing if he could get them executed. He was hot on the trail. And you remember what happened? He had a vision. He was thrown off his horse by this vision, thrown to the ground, and found himself talking to Jesus, the glorified Jesus. "Why are you kicking against me?" he said. And Saul, blinded, got to his feet afterwards and was taken into Damascus, working out what hit him. And that changed Saul's life forever. Massive change. But in the early days, you get the feeling he wasn't that easy. He'd undergone a huge meeting with Jesus, which changed him. But it takes a bit of time to get these big things sorted in your head. And it was only after he'd had his 3 years in Arabia that he really began to get going and become the missionary he became to all the areas around the Mediterranean, really. And you feel that for Jacob, he's a bit in shock as well. It's going to take him a bit of time. So, picking up Jacob again, we follow him and the family and the staff and the sheep and the cows and all the rest, headed in the general direction of the old home, which was Seir. He sets off on his way. Esau had gone back and... There we are. Jacob came from Paddan Aram and arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan. Canaan was the promised land. Canaan was where God wanted him to be, and he'd left it when he went to Laban. He was coming back. God was bringing him home. And he camped within sight of the city. He bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, that means the founder of Shechem, a plot of land where he pitched his tent. He set up an altar there and called it El Elohe Israel. He's come home. What a journey. You think about it, the escape from Laban first, then spotting Esau on the horizon, then the completely different Esau that he hardly recognized. Then finding the change that God had put in him. He may have been almost surprised himself by how he responded to Esau. So they're back home. He's back home. Shechem was not all easy, as we'll discover next week. But you might like to know that at the end of chapter 35... Isaac died, and he was buried by Jacob and Esau together. Which says a lot, I think. Jacob and Esau together were there to bury their father, Abraham's son. They were Abraham's grandchildren. It was a momentous journey. It was literally a geographical journey. Our journeys are often not big geographical ones like that. But they can be quite hard. They can be quite important, very important. It may not involve many miles, but if there's a relationship that needs putting right, then they're big. And we can see from Jacob and Esau that God can do it. But somehow both halves have to get to the point where, even if it's only at the moment it happens, they're willing to do it. And they did. Praise God. Amen.